Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Well, I guess we're here. We're back. Again. Yeah. Spooked ya.
Yeah, I'm so scared of that. Hello.
Of me?
No.
The worst year ever. The worst years. We should have changed it to the worst years ever when we continued on. In hindsight's 2021.
The years, comma, they have not gotten better.
The year that continues poorly.
Yep.
Even though it's technically a different year. That's good. We could do like there could be a song
it
for that.
It does have something to it, but I don't know, man.
There's an internal rhythm. I think we can make it work.
It flows to the beat of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right. Like a cosmic gumbo.
It's like it is like a cosmic gumbo.
Garrison's here today.
Hello.
Hey, Cody.
We're so glad to see them.
Cody.
Yes.
Cody.
Yes.
How'd you feel about the Boba Fett shows? The Boba Feets.
Here's how I feel about the Boba Fett show. Well, The Mandalorian, I would say, is like pretty good in terms of the direction it was trying to take the Star Wars. Boba Fett is an interesting show because me, Cody, from, let's say, 15 years ago, would have immediately watched it as soon as it was put up and probably watched it a second time and watched all of it. I haven't seen a second of the Boba Fett show.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
It's good. It's good.
Is it?
It's fine.
I liked it. Because it's basically just more of The Mandalorian.
It is not a Boba Fett show, which is nice.
I don't care about Boba Fett. I just like, I like.
Neither does the show.
Like, why should
he? It's fine. It's kind of a wonky space Western thing, which is all that I wanted from it. I'm not going to watch it a second time.
That's what you want from Star Wars. Mostly.
I watched it. I enjoy the fights. The characters are, they're all actors that I like seeing do stuff. I don't have strong feelings about it.
The show does not elicit strong feelings.
It does in that I comprehensively enjoy it.
See, that's the thing about it. Like, that's why I haven't watched it. It's like I have no feeling about it.
It has no feel. It is so sanitized and corporate, and the show is so uninterested in Boba Fett as a character because no one should be interested in him because he's boring.
He's not.
Counterpoint from someone who hasn't seen The Mandalorian or Boba Fett. It's not gonna. Sometimes you just need something, whatever, to put on with good fights.
That's kind of what
good
it is.
Enough actors, especially when the world is looking like it is now.
Yeah, I have not watched or cared about. I have not cared about a Star Wars in a long time. I didn't care for any of the new movies.
A long time.
I did not care for any of the prequels.
Why
but
would you?
I've liked some of the comics, and the Boba Fett show's fun. I enjoyed it. It's good.
I love that for you, Robert.
Yeah,
I would enjoy a Dr. Offer TV show. That would be fun.
A Dr. Offer TV show. And the thing that I liked most about the Boba Fett show was Black Kersantan showing up, which made me think like, oh, we might actually get the thing that I want most.
Well, that's the thing. Like with a show like this, I'm like, well, don't do a Boba Fett show. Just do like literally Tales for the Bounty.
A Star Wars anthology series would be so much better.
I feel like they did that. They just stuck the name Boba Fett on the top.
That is what happens.
That's right. How you get the clicks. But I don't care.
You're Disney. You're on Disney Plus. You're doing Star Wars. You don't need to get the clicks. People will be there no matter what you do.
Here's my attitude. The fact that Disney launched what they claimed was a Boba Fett show and then in the middle of the series had half of the episodes not feature Boba Fett is the bravest decision I've seen them make yet in the Star Wars realm, and very funny.
I am into that. It's really funny.
Halfway through, it stops being a Boba Fett show. It literally just becomes the Mandalorian season, whatever. 2.5.
He's not in the episodes. Just Pedro Pascal doing shit.
Does he come back?
Episodes?
He's not in multiple episodes.
That's very funny.
I thought it was his book.
No, it turns into a show with Pedro Pascal and CGI Mark Hamill. And that's what the show is.
Here's what I like. I didn't like the CGI Mark Hamill stuff. That was the most off-putting part of it to me, Garrison.
Yeah.
I thought it would. Number one, if you're going to do CGI Mark Hamill's face to make him look young, okay, I'll take the argument because he's a big part of the Star Wars expanded universe. Just let Mark Hamill do the voice. Don't get weird with it.
He's
the greatest voice actor alive. Use him.
Do the thing that other things have done, which is get the actor to do it and then de-age him. Like Downey Jr. in Civil War. His wrinkles are too deep.
If you're going to do the weird fucking, the deep fake thing, at least use his real voice. But that is
the real problem, is that it's also a deep fake voice via the program Respeecher, which sounds so emotionless.
It's just a robot trying to.
And that part I didn't like, but what I did like about it is that in terms of its construction, it's bizarre for a TV show to be ostensibly based around a guy and then he disappears for half of the series.
That's very weird.
But it's not weird for a comic book. Comic books do that kind of shit all the time.
That is true.
And that's kind of what I thought might be, that we might be heading towards something kind of neat where they actually are building up to just doing what they've been doing pretty well. Like the latest run of Star Wars comics have been good. And I say, again, as someone who's not particularly a Star Wars fan, I like all of that shit, the Darth Vader ones and stuff. There's some good stuff in there. And it's my hope that they'll just kind of keep spinning towards that, and they'll get really weird with it. There were some moments of Cad Bane showing up and shit.
Yeah.
It's like, well, oh, wow. Okay. You guys are willing to get kind of
so
strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was also fun
when he did a drug trip with the Tuskens.
Yeah, when he took ayahuasca with the Tusken
Raiders.
Maybe
the best episode was episode two when he just did drugs with the Tuskens.
Yeah.
And that was actually incredibly rad.
There's some fun shit in there. And my promise to you is this, Cody. If you watch the Boba Fett's show, you will be frustrated at some points. You will be entertained at other points. You will probably not be thinking about the looming specter of global conflict for most of the time that you watch that show. Yeah,
that's all I can ask from a Star Wars.
That's all anyone can ask for.
From specifically Star Wars too. No one's asking you to make amazing art.
Speaking of the looming specter of global conflict.
Before we pivot to the news, this has nothing to do with Star Wars either, but it's a really good show that I know none of you watched, and I want you to watch it. I want you all to watch it, and it's called Patriot. And it's on Amazon Prime.
I thought you were going to say Euphoria.
No, I wasn't going to do that. But really,
I thought you were going to say The Vampire Diaries.
I truly think that you would all enjoy the show Patriot on Amazon Prime. And
I have heard that. I've heard
great entertainment.
What is it? What is it?
It's a show on Amazon Prime. it's great. It's only got two seasons. Outstanding motherfucking cast. And I don't know how much to say to not spoil it, but it's basically a guy works in the government, and his son is a not Secret Service, but he does off the book jobs for the government, and but he's all fucked up from one trip, and he has to go straight into another one to intercept some cash, blah blah blah, and it spirals out. But it's very it's so funny, and it's heartbreaking and well written and full of action, and it's also like a lovely family story. There's like a brother relationship that's very special. It's really, it's good. Nobody watches it and is disappointed. That's your homework.
I will check that out.
It's good to have a good show to watch when times are like this. Mm-hmm. If you need to like just zone out.
That sounds fun. I have been, people all over my timeline have been talking about Euphoria, which my favorite thing about this, I know nothing about the show. I haven't watched it. I don't plan to watch it. But the very fun part is that like all of the commentary for weeks has been like, oh, it's high school kids. They're dealing with like drugs and, you know, one of them's trans. And like, it's all this like, you know, seemed like a normal like high school
basic stuff.
And then someone's people started playing a clip from apparently the last episode where you watch the show, huh?
I do watch it. I'm sorry.
It's I have no idea what's going on now.
The truth comes out.
That's not a secret that I watch television.
Cody, as another spoiler, Boba Feet's he gets out of the hole. He gets out of the pit.
What the fuck?
Dirt pit.
Pit. We started the show with saying I've not seen the Boba Fett show yet. Unbelievable.
The gloved hand of Boba Fett.
Getting out of a pit.
Getting out of a hole.
That he got knocked into accidentally.
Well, I would argue that sounds classic like a real just falling
Bubba,
into the hole.
Boba Feet. Like a feet.
Yeah. He's lost his Boba footing. Yeah.
I think classic Boba Fett is just falling into the hole.
And
now we're expanding his character because he's able to get out of a hole.
Right. The end of the hero's journey is I crawled out of the hole. He reached apotheosis and then he crawled out of the hole.
Should we pivot?
Yeah, we should probably pivot.
Probably.
We've literally gone like probably a year or more without talking about TV, but now everything is so bad that we talked about TV for 11 minutes and 46 seconds.
Why not?
Last time we talked about it, it was Gay Superman was the last time that
God. Man, that was like 47 moral panics ago.
It was.
At least.
I forgot we had Gay Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, those were the days.
Those were the days.
Yeah, when Superman ruined society by having a gay son.
Look where we are now. Things have gotten worse.
Yeah,
so.
we had a gay Superman, and then Vladimir Putin started a war.
Mm-hmm. Because of it.
So.
Because of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he did give that speech a few months ago about wokeness and PC culture,
Gay Superman,
destroying the West.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, NATO stands for nobody ever takes
taste
off funds. Yeah, I don't know. I was gonna try to tie it in, but there's no way. I've got nothing. How are we all doing?
What's going on in the world? What are we talking about?
Pretty bad stuff.
Katie, you've been so patient. You're like, shouldn't we talk about like what we're here for?
Yeah. I don't know.
This has been a hard week. I don't even know how to start talking about everything, you know?
Well, I think the thing that is most notable to me is that there are there's what's actually happening in the war. And then there's the Russian propaganda, which is fairly incoherent and not particularly, because of like how rapidly a bunch of shit was deplatformed, there's very little visibility of that in the West. And then there's the Ukrainian propaganda, which is most of what people who are listening to this are seeing on their timeline, which doesn't mean that like it's not none of it's happening or anything, but it does mean that like a very skewed view of what's happening on the ground is being passed to people because largely that it feels good. And like, again, there's all sorts of like, there's always mixes of truth in with it. Like, for example, you now have the thing that happens anytime a person in a position of power doesn't fuck up, which is that a chunk of libs have gotten real weird and sexual about it.
Very horny.
I felt because I there's a lot of really valid criticisms of Zelensky, particularly prior to the outbreak of fighting. Among other things, one thing that he repeatedly kind of downplayed what they believed of as the risk of a full-scale Russian invasion, to the point of like really arguing with a lot of the U.S. intelligence, which, you know, yeah. I think there's an argument
that
like
he was trying to keep it from panic, yes, and everything, but at the same time, people needed to leave.
Yes, there's a lot of civilians who did not adequately get to prepare for what was going to happen. And again,
I think that's a really important point, to not just like the fact that they've had Russian military and on their periphery for a long time. You know, they were invaded not that long ago.
8 years ago.
I mean, but, you know, it happened, and there've been, you know,
there
Russian
was weeks of buildup.
Weeks of buildup. But I think from what I'm understanding, just people didn't quite, until it happened, they didn't believe that it would happen.
And there's so much disinformation that always surrounds war. Yeah. There's so much disinformation surrounding this. It's not the kind of, I'm not going to like condemn Zelensky as a human being forever for that failure of his administration, but it is a failure and it deserves to be noted as such. And there have been some other things that are really questionable. One of them is, this is probably not questionable from a military standpoint. You could argue it's the right thing to do, but it's a deeply morally questionable act, which is the forced conscription of every adult male under the age of 60, which has led to some really brutal moments, particularly at the border, as families try to flee and they are separated from their sons and husbands, which is, again, in the long view of history, when we're looking at this, you know, 50, 100 years down the line, depending on how this all goes, people may say, well, this was, you know, this was what allowed Ukraine to eke out a victory. This was necessary, you know, just like so many horrible things that had to be done by the Allied forces in World War II wound up being necessary. Or we may say, well, this fed a lot of young men into a meat grinder, left a lot of families without kids, and it didn't affect the old. And we can't know, right? These are things that are worth discussing and worth being potentially critical about, but we also have to acknowledge as like, well, nobody ever makes perfect or even mostly good decisions in a war. I think that would be fair to argue. Like, you can look at FDR.
It's an impossible calculation.
Inspiring moments of FDR from World War II while he was like locking Japanese people up in internment camps, you know? Same thing with, you know, so I'll give Zelensky a lot of credit for staying and repeatedly putting his life on the line and refusing to do what I think nearly every other world leader would have done, which is get the fuck out of there and hide in a mansion and, you know, Germany or somewhat, and try to direct this from a distance, which is by far the norm. And the fact that he didn't speaks better of him as a person than I can probably say of any other national elected leader on the planet at the moment.
And it certainly caught the world's attention if it wasn't paying attention before.
Yeah,
and you know,
the horniness is weird, and I hate it when that happens. I hate it because it makes me feel like, you know, I made some posts being like, this is something that should be lauded, this specific act, you know, refusing to leave. That is, you know, an act of courage that we should appreciate. And then when a bunch of people get really horny about it, it's like, well, should I even, are you feeding into that by just like commenting on this thing that is legitimately good? And these are kind of, there's a lot of, it's the same thing with like, are you feeding into unreasonable and unrealistic optimism about the course of the war if you celebrate
and
specific kinds of victories
I think
outside
that
of
what
the
happens,
context of the broader struggle.
What happens, what we see happening, I mean, Garrison, you put some examples in this doc, I'm sure, but this idea that it's like a movie playing out and he's our unlikely hero.
It's a movie mixed with
the sports game. I know, but like, because he's got this storied past and it reads like a screenplay.
It is very funny that he played the piano with his testicles on stage at one point.
It was.
That's great and fine, but also we don't need a New York Post article saying
we
fans
sure don't
cast Jeremy Renner as Zelensky in fantasy Ukraine
invasion
film.
Unbelievable. No. It makes me sick.
No, and like, everyone doing that should be flung into the sea.
We're like watching in real time whether or not he dies.
Like,
but thousands of people have died. And him,
a thousand people are dying. Like vacuum bombs are being detonated in crowded city blocks. Some of the most terrifying weapons that exist on this planet.
Yeah, you can not stand precedence. Like, you don't need to. Like, you can recognize that certain leaders are doing things that other people may be too cowardly to do. But you can recognize that without getting weirdly horny about it. Because the drive of hero worship, specifically towards politicians and political leaders, like, is not good. Like, there's lots of other people who are putting their lives on the line way more, but we default always to politicians and political leaders. And as cool as it may be that he's sticking around, like, this is a purposeful, like, propaganda move. Like, it's good. Yeah. Like, it's very well done, but it does have that dual purpose.
And I think part of why, one thing you have to clarify when we talk about it is a propaganda move. Propaganda doesn't just mean, or even necessarily in a case like this, primarily mean something directed outward.
Correct.
The thing that I think is probably most successful about what Zelensky is doing is that it's having, and from everything I can tell, a significant morale impact on soldiers on the ground. Just knowing that, like, well, they would probably feel less bad about the fact that many of them are going to die if the guy who was ostensibly leading them was hiding in a mansion in Berlin or something, you know, which is understandable. And as a military choice, as a tactical choice, as a strategic choice, this is really more of a strategic than a tactical choice. I think you probably, with what Zelensky has done, get more people who are willing to fight harder and do things like what we're seeing in Mariupol right now, where you've got the entire city now surrounded and cut off by an overwhelming number of Russian troops. And there's a pretty good chance that every single Ukrainian soldier there, if they don't surrender, is going to die fighting along with a fuckload of civilians.
Yeah.
And maybe people wouldn't be willing to do that if Zelensky had not made the example. And also the question that we cannot answer until this is over is, will that alter things? Has he made a decision by increasing, you know, doing these things that have improved fighting spirit so much? Is that going to help Ukraine fight off this aggression? Or is it just going to mean that when everything is settled, a hell of a lot more Ukrainians are dead? And you don't know. This is not a kind of thing you can condemn or applaud. It's a tactic, you know, and it's not a tactic that we know the efficacy of yet.
From a
moral level, I can applaud fighting for your homeland. I think that's fighting for your homes against aggression is a good thing. But like, is it going to work, or is it just going to be more bodies in the dirt?
I don't know. Well, we need to take a quick break and then we'll come back and keep having this conversation.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
And we're back. And that's what we are.
We are politely, respectfully back. Hello.
We are politely, respectfully back.
Okay.
Outside of, you know, we've I think discussed Zelensky to the extent that is useful for
Yeah, just like keep the well, homosexual shit to yourself.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, and again, and if he dies, it's fine to mourn him. It's fine to like respect yeah. the choices he's making, because I think he's handling this as well as a wartime leader possibly could, given everything he is capable of knowing and everything right. that we know. I don't actually have it's fine to say that. You don't need to talk about him being hot. That's not helping.
No,
it's just
and
weird.
It's really
yeah.
it's really
disrespectful,
gross when it,
actually.
Yeah,
and it's like, really gross when it starts intersecting with like the fantasy Ukraine invasion film type
yeah.
idea of.
It's not a movie.
No,
tremendous numbers of people are going to die and have died already. Yeah,
it's not okay. I wanted to respond to one thing that you had said that we had been talking about right before the break. If they should have surrendered or if they should surrender versus how many people are going to die in making that decision. I think it's important to note that like this whole thing is so fucked, because it's very clear that even if they do surrender, there's nothing about this that will be peaceful. People will continue to die.
Russians
there
will
be
round
uprisings.
Up journalists, activists, gay mm-hmm. people, they will be massacred. They'll do what they did in Chechnya, you know?
The civilians are not going to stop making Molotov cocktails. They're not going to, like, just walk peacefully into this. So either way, this is unfathomable bloodshed, you know?
This is a guy who's been handed a nightmare, and a country that's been handed a nightmare.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of points at which things could have been done to stop what we're seeing right now from happening. Beginning much further back than 8 years ago, which is when the Russians invaded Ukraine initially, and nothing was done. You know, nobody did anything, and it's internationally nobody did anything. And if you want to talk about like the moral culpability of the United States or of NATO, it's in the fact that Putin, number one, wound up in charge at all, which had a lot to do with U.S. decisions that were made, re yeah. Boris Yeltsin. It's the fact that a number of Russian aggressive moves and backing of dictators in a variety of countries around the world, particularly Syria, where Russians tested weapons and tactics mm-hmm. for years, nothing was done. Nothing was done about Chechnya when they leveled Grozny. Mm-hmm. Nothing was done when they invaded Ukraine 8 years ago. And when you have a guy like Putin, and nothing keeps being, and no one pushes back, effectively at least, over and over again, they keep grabbing more and more. And we are seeing the result. It's this thing I talked about when Turkey, you know, moved in the northeast Syria. And it's this thing I talk about a lot, because there's been this huge problem on the left of folks who have decided that, like, this is a fight. In any sort of struggle where the U.S. and Russia can be opposed, they should be on Russia's side for vaguely anti-imperialist reasons. And this kind of has been extended and for years was extended. It's part of why international support for the Arab Spring collapsed. And it's why you have these people who will, you know, stand Bashar al-Assad as a socialist hero or whatever the fuck, these gray zone scum fucks. And when you cannot let a dictator mass murder people, because it never stops there. It'll spread. It's the same as ignoring cancer cells in your body. And what we are seeing in Ukraine, and these threats these fears everyone has that are growing now that this is going to get nuclear, the seeds of this were sown, I mean, much further back than, you know, the start of the Syrian Civil War. But the Syrian Civil War was a major factor in all of this. And you can't just keep... at this point, there's no good solutions, right? So, every, and we'll talk a bit about that later, every possible resolution to this is real ugly, and every possible tactic to resist what Russia's doing is real ugly and very problematic. There was a time when that would not necessarily have been the case, but we all just sat on this shit.
Yeah.
Unless you're, you know, someone who was fighting in the street against Assad and somebody who was, you know, resisting Russian aggression and there's somebody. And, you know, in fact, not to be entirely Russia centric, the fact that the way in which the United States invaded Iraq has had massive impacts on how the Russians proceeded in Ukraine and is a big part of why so many people were willing to buy the idea that, number one, all of what the State Department was saying about the Russian invasion, all of this intelligence was flawed and nonsense. Like, the fact that so many people on the left believe that is understandable in part because there was a time in our immediate past when they lied a shitload about stuff like that.
Of course.
Those consequences were tremendous. So there's a lot of blame
when you can't trust your government.
Around. Yeah,
you can't trust what they're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
For decades and decades and decades.
So,
and decades.
Yeah, it is. Fuck. I don't know how to. Yeah. I'm gonna say edit me saying this. It is very frustrating to watch, to talk about. I mean, what I'm about to say, I'm not suggesting that we should be invading, the United States should be coming in on, you know, the white horse. I understand what's at stake here. I understand.
We don't have a horse. Like, there's no way to get a horse in that fucker.
But,
you
like,
know?
He also knows that we've got a nuclear device pointed right at him, but he doesn't seem to care. He's not like some rational actor.
We're not going to start a nuke fight with Russia, but he could start. He could deploy tactical nukes and see what happens. Like, he is a dice rolling guy, and that gives him the power in this situation, because he can conceivably and realistically threaten, hey, I'll get nuclear if you guys move troops in directly. You know,
I get to establish the line here.
And we're throwing out sanctions and stuff, which is a deeply questionable in a number of ways. This is what happens when you kind of cede all sort of initiative to the authoritarians, and when you do authoritarian shit yourself often enough that, like, there's no reason for anyone to trust you above them. There was a period of time, I think, after World War II, and then a period of time after the end of the Cold War, where there were real opportunities for an international system that would have made it a lot harder for dictators to do the kind of shit that's being done now. But that also would have been an international system where, again, for example, the United States would not have been able to invade Iraq.
Well, there are so many instances of just, like, we pushed this envelope in our own way for so many decades.
Absolutely.
That it's like, well, how can we, what do we do now? We made sure that the bottle was open.
Yes.
That we could do it. And
you have to be willing to acknowledge that and see that. Otherwise, you don't see the shape of the problem adequately without letting that be the end of your analysis. Because also... the fact that the U.S. did all of this fucked up shit and still does fucked up shit does not matter to people in Kharkiv who are being subjected to thermobaric artillery right now. And that is the problem that we have the ability to do something about right now as a species, I guess. And so then the question becomes, like, well, what could make the situation, what is the least awful way for this awful situation to potentially resolve? And I think that's kind of the thing to discuss next, and it's very much muddled, and it kind of depends on, there's a lot of, to quote one of the guys responsible for this situation, there's a lot of known unknowns, right? Mm. And then, you never know what the unknown unknowns are. I actually do, like, fuck him, but I don't think that's a useless thought schema to go into something, but, like, what are the unknown unknowns is worth asking. And one of the biggest ones, maybe the biggest one in the situation, is how solid is Putin's actual grip on power? You know, what are the odds of a palace coup? We can see, last I checked, something like 7,500 people arrested in several Russian cities in protests since the start of the war, which is enormous. 6,000
was the last number I heard, I think.
An enormous number of people, given how illegal any kind of protest against this sort of thing is in Russia. And it seems to be growing. Is it even theoretically possible for it to grow to such a level that it threatens the stability of the state?
Right, where they can't just, like, arrest everybody.
I have no way of, no one has any way of knowing that to a point of certainty. That seems unlikely. I think most people who know Russia say the thing that is more possible, not that it's likely, but is more possible, would be the term they use is a palace coup, right? Which is people around Putin not being willing to deal with the consequences, economic and otherwise, of this invasion, and to some extent either minimizing him or taking him out of power. And there's some reasons to believe this is possible, including, according to some reports at least, he's kind of had a really interesting response to COVID, shall we say, and has been hiding away from basically everybody, which would tend to suspect that maybe he's more atomized kind of from a lot of people, and maybe there's more room for these for folks who might otherwise have been too much under his sight to like make some moves. It's possible.
Right. That's, if the perception is that he's in a sort of a weak state or something by their estimation or whatever.
But we just don't know how realistic that is, right? It's certainly not something you can bet on. You know, it's the kind of thing where if it happens, everyone will be kind of surprised and kind of not surprised at the same time. They'll be like, oh, I didn't realize this was possible. But also, well, of course, it might have been possible, you know. We're there, right? And there's nothing you can do with that information
right.
but hope.
Sort of space where, like, literally, I mean, not literally, but like pretty much anything is possible. There's no way to predict the next, you know, 24 hours, let alone 12 hours or anything like that.
And
so to, it's like this sort of helpless,
you have to wait and see. We don't know what's real, what's false, what to what information to trust.
And that's partly why I think that like it's so easy for people to get stuck in that like, oh, it's like a movie. Oh, who's going to play this guy? Because like there's a sense of helplessness because it's, we're not like we can't influence the events really. You can like donate to places, you know, are helping and things like that. But like it's just we're just here watching TV. And I think that also that's sort of like the past however many years have like led us up to this point where like it just seems like you're disconnected, but you want to feel connected. And it's just like it is like
I'll say one thing that you can do. I mean, I'm just reiterating what we've said. Don't do what we're saying, you know, and be aware of what's of not being just not reacting immediately to something like double check it. Look at who's retweeting shit. Like this is rampant right now.
Well, like
it's,
literally
it's
any
awful.
Day,
you're
any,
sharing the bad information.
Yeah, I mean any day on Twitter is some. That is how you should go about your day.
Yeah,
but especially right now.
Be vigilant. I know. I'm just saying that like that is a problem every single day on Twitter. Especially if there's like a disaster, or like a hurricane, any sort of disaster situation, or like a mass shooting. And the most during a war. like because not only is there just bad actors doing like with misinformation, but like there's going to be propaganda from everywhere.
Yes.
You need to sift through it because it's very easy to get caught up in it. Like, ooh, wow, the Ghost of Kiev. We're going to very cool. It's like, in theory, but like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and it's going to be a mix of propaganda. Just like, you know, one of the most viral initial story from this was those border guards on Snake Island who, you know, said, who absolutely told a Russian warship to go fuck themselves. And the initial report was that they had all died, and now it seems like they didn't.
They were taken prisoner.
I think they all didn't. Yeah,
there's no way to know. Like, well, was that propaganda initially from the government, or were they just like, well, we lost contact with these guys.
Feels,
we thought they were dead. You know,
that one feels less like propaganda as a story that we all reacted to before having all the information. One point I'll make is that while this isn't the first war during social media, of course not, this kind of thing, everyone's paying attention to it, what's happening, an invasion of another country. We have social media. We have videos on the ground. It's not like the story happens and then 5 days later we're reading it in a newspaper. We're seeing it happen in real time. And so we are learning things in relatively real time, and that changes. So the place was bombed. Everyone, you maybe think everyone's dead, but became almost like propaganda because we were all watching, we're waiting, and we're looking, and it becomes this hero story, and we start to martyr them immediately.
Right. Well, also,
and we
like,
don't know what's going to happen to them. Their lives are in danger still.
Yeah. Also, the thing about propaganda is that something's propaganda doesn't automatically mean that it's false. It's not like it doesn't need to be a falsehood. It doesn't need to be a complete lie to be propaganda. Like this event, this like Snake Island thing. Okay, that happened. They said this. That's all we know. We can use that piece of information for like, you know, like we were talking about earlier with like morale or just like general propaganda usage. It's not a lie. It's just being used for a specific purpose.
And yeah, same thing with Ghost of Kiev in terms of it being this tool that people in power are using to raise morale, and the truthfulness of it honestly does not even matter because of the way it's being used as a tool. Because you can point to all of the things being like, no, all the pictures that people are posting
are actually of a French helmet test photo shoot,
or like a flight simulator,
and all the videos are from video games that are all cutscenes.
And this has been going on, by the way, for years.
It's been happening for a long time.
A ton of this stuff happening. Yeah. Like Russia in particular had a thing of like posting footage from video games and then saying it was from, you know, wherever, Syria.
The Ukrainian government's doing the same thing. They're posting videos that are from Digital Combat Simulator.
And they're very good at it. They have definitely been, whatever's happening on the ground, which we can talk about in a bit, is debatable. In terms of propaganda, they've definitely
won the first salvos
of the propaganda war, which is not nothing, especially when you talk about
very important.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, caught up in the middle of like all of this glory. We just dropped an episode, and it could happen here today, about, it'll have been a couple of days ago, but it's called Escaping Ukraine, and it's about what it's actually like at the border and all of these people getting to the border, right, whose stories are much less attractive than these, mm-hmm. these brave stories of resistance. And stories of particularly like black people, black Ukrainians, a lot of whom are refugees themselves, getting denied the ability to cross at the border. And it's a little unclear to me at the moment how much of that problem is with Polish border guards and how much is with Ukrainian. There's a mm-hmm. lot of like people are arguing about it enough that I don't feel confident saying which is more responsible, but it's mm-hmm. happening. That there's certainly evidence that like
right.
that it's a problem. Another article that just dropped today is there's a number of trans people in Kyiv in particular who, because of, you know, just the realities of transitioning, their passport did not yet match their mm-hmm. gender identity. And they are afraid to flee because mm-hmm. they do not know what will happen to them at the border, particularly given Poland has done mm-hmm. been great in general about Ukrainian refugees, but also Poland not super pro LGBT mm-hmm. as a rule. But also obviously like a lot of those people would just be fucking murdered if Russia takes over, because that's what happened in fucking Chechnya, you know? And in fact, there's a pretty good chance that the guy who orchestrated like mass killings of LGBT people in Chechnya died fighting in Ukraine recently. Although we know we've got confirmation that decent numbers of his troops were wiped out, because we've seen like the wrecked vehicles and stuff in CNN footage. I don't know. I haven't seen that guy's body anywhere, although, you know, he's been claimed by the Ukrainian government that he's been killed. So it's hard to say. There's a lot of, again, fog of war is a thing for a reason in video games. It happens in reality. And there's when it comes to like what you should and should not share, I think it's generally good to share articles that are written by journalists who are there on the ground and seem to be trying mm-hmm. to do with the knowledge that like that's not going to be perfect either. You know, there are people in places like Twitter, journalists who are doing the best job possible of curating stuff and of verifying. Some of my former colleagues at Bellingcat have been doing a lot of work verifying. People like Eric Toller, Giancarlo, people like Christo have been putting a lot of effort into attempting to verify things and doing stuff like, okay, here's a video that shows an airstrike. Can we confirm this is in Ukraine? Can we confirm this wasn't, you know, 6 years ago? And so those would be people to look at. I'll try to grab you one more name before we go out of here. But in general, like, you're sharing and retweeting combat footage or memes about fighting, or jokes, or, you know, celebrating Russian defeat preemptively is not gonna help anything.
It'll help people feel good about themselves.
Yeah, they will. And then they'll feel like something impossible happened when the war doesn't go well. Because, like, here's the thing. It does seem fair to say, based on the things that we can, like, know to a point of certainty, the initial Russian invasion was kind of a clusterfuck. And there's a number of reasons for that, right? If you want to look at this as an attempt at Blitzkrieg, and it does seem accurate based both on what they did and based on some leaked conversations that have come out between a Chechen leader and the Russian government, because this dude was just like recording voice messages and sending them over. And I think The Guardian published that article, that the initial plan, that the hope and the belief among the Russian command staff and among Putin was that, as Hitler said, we need only kick in the door and the whole rotten structure will collapse, right? That was this idea that, like, there's not going to be much of a fight if we can kind of shock and awe them. You know, the cities will collapse quickly, the government will collapse, and we'll be able to take command. And so as a result, if you're looking at, like, how, you know, a Blitzkrieg-type situation is supposed to work, like what the Nazis did in France quite successfully, or for a time successfully in Russia, you have what's called your first echelon, which is your first wave of troops, and they move in and they move forward as fast as they possibly can, and they do not engage with every enemy they can. Their priority is to move forward and take and like advance more than it is to engage with and destroy the enemy. They do engage with and destroy the enemy at parts when they're blocked, but that's not their primary goal. And so the first echelon leaves large numbers of intact enemy forces behind them as they advance, because their goal is disruption and their goal is making it kind of impossible for the enemy to effectively react and to effectively engage resistance. And then a second echelon comes from behind them and they engage more of those troops that were left behind. Then there's a third echelon, right? That's how a Blitzkrieg tactic is supposed to work. That's not what the Russians did in the first 5 days or so of this invasion. They sent in that first echelon, which included a tremendous deal of very elite special forces operators, airborne troops, you know, Spetsnaz, and they sent in elements of battalion task groups, but not cohesive ones. So to the extent that Russian soldiers were engaging with Ukrainian soldiers, it was often individual little units as opposed to like combined arms forces, where you have air support and artillery support. And because the Russian army is more than anything an artillery army, right? And that's why you've seen such terrible casualties. And they do seem to be, again, the Ukrainian government numbers can't be trusted, but there's enough verified videos of successful Ukrainian drone strikes and attacks that, like, they have suffered significant losses. It's because they, I think, thought that this sort of first echelon was all they would need to collapse everything, and then they could bring in National Guard troops and conscript troops and sort of riot police kind of troops in after that, and they would not be required to do some of the things that they have had to do in places like Syria. They wouldn't have to shell these cities into rubble. That things wouldn't go that far. And clearly, Ukrainian resistance has been significant enough that they're going to have to. So part of what we are seeing now is Russia kind of reorienting their strategy. And the fact that this has been a fuck up for them in a lot of ways up to this point, including the fact that they did not immediately gain air supremacy, that they seem to have lost a significant number of air assets and artillery assets to Ukrainian air power, which still exists at this point. That's evidence of some substantial strategic and tactical failures by the Russians. But it's not evidence that they're fucked, because Russia has a lot of reserves to
yeah, they can have, keep going.
Yeah, the thing that we just saw one day ago, by the time we are recording this episode, it'll have been a couple of days since, you know, when you hear this, is the deployment of thermobaric weapons, which so artillery and airstrikes do not work as well as the people who advocate for their use like to think. And one piece of evidence, you can look at like battles in World War I, where, you know, the British or whoever would fire a million shells at a chunk of trench line a few miles long and then get machine gunned to pieces by the people there, because they didn't kill very many of them, actually, because if you're well dug in and whatnot, that doesn't work as well. And likewise, at the start of this war, you saw a lot of Russian missiles, a lot of Russian precision munitions, like striking military targets, and then still tremendous Ukrainian resistance. All of this sort of shock and awe was not successful in disrupting Ukrainian command and control. So now the Russians are starting to deploy what are called thermobaric weapons. And thermobaric weapons are the most frightening weapons humans have developed that are not nuclear. The way they essentially work is it's a couple of stages. So you have a precision munition that strikes a target. It releases a cloud of explosive material, often just like fuel, and then a second explosion ignites the cloud. So what that does is, among other things, sucks the oxygen in from an area and it creates a vacuum, right? Like one of the ways people die from thermobarics is the air is ripped from their lungs. And the explosive force of the blast is titanic. Some thermobaric weapons like the Moab, which Trump famously used in Afghanistan, and the Russians have their own version of this, are equivalent to low-yield nuclear weapons in terms of their destructive power. They're not radioactive. Obviously, they're not nuclear. But in terms of the actual radius of the blast and the radius of the shockwave, they are equivalent to nuclear weapons. And there are no functional fortifications that can really withstand them, at least not on like a tactical level. They wipe out troop formations. They are nightmare weapons. And the Russians have a lot of these to deploy. And the Russians have a lot of air power to deploy. And we're starting to see that being moved into position more effectively. Ukrainian resistance is still fierce. You're also seeing stuff like as this, you know, famous, now the current big, I don't know, meme of the war is this Russian convoy heading towards Kiev, right? And there's all, everyone's like, it's 17 miles. No, it's just 3 or 4. No, it's 40 miles. Like, there's a lot of debate as to how, what kind of impact this will have. And you're seeing Ukraine adopt tactics. There's been a lot of an increase in kind of guerrilla tactics, taking supply vehicles and whatnot from this caravan and like precision strikes and whatnot. So I'm certainly not saying the situation is doomed from their standpoint. There's a lot that could happen. And Russian losses have been very heavy, including on some of their most elite troops. But at the end of the day, if Putin commits fully, if there is not a level of unrest in the streets of Russia that they can't deal with, or a palace coup, and if there is no outside intervention, Russia has the capacity to level every building in Ukraine until there is no resistance. They have done it in other places. It is not a thing that is beyond their capacity.
Well, that was really depressing to listen to. And what do we do?
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snag a Job is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The one other thing that I would like to get your guys' thoughts on specifically is, you know, we talked before about how there's like, you know, having to like verify footage, how there's been, you know, a lot of footage is like actually from other places from other kind of conflicts. So there's been multiple instances of video footage and pictures from Palestine being misattributed to being from the Russian invasion. And it's interesting looking at like how actions taken in those photos are so people have their, they're so much more valid in the Russian-Ukraine conflict than they are in the Palestine-Israel conflict. And I want to talk about like the selective validity of nations and how efforts to defend your home from invading attacking forces are viewed differently when all these extra geopolitical forces are at play. So like all like the xenophobia and racism happening in one instance, and then, you know, everyone accepting all these refugees from Ukraine because they're white people. So I would like to get your thoughts on those kind of notes that that I've gathered.
I think the most striking example of that is a video of a little girl who appears to be a white girl in the video. Like you would, like that's what most people guessed upon seeing the video. They just, she looked white to them. Like kicking a soldier. And like the video was claiming like this is a Ukrainian girl like kicking, you know, a Russian occupier, and like look at the courage of like, the reality is that she is a Palestinian girl kicking an Israeli soldier and she went to fucking prison for it.
She's actually a relatively famous Palestinian activist who is part of a family of activists who've been organizing since 2008. And she's been to prison. Her brothers and cousins have been, have had their faces blown up by
regular victims of violence
by violence from Israeli forces. And she has gone to prison for a long time because of her efforts to combat and stand against these invading forces for her home country.
And this,
to be clear, she ended up going to prison later than that picture was taken. They didn't imprison her at age five, but
not because of the photo.
I think she was like 14 or 15.
But the point is, correct, this misinformation, but also these double standards that we have, you know, like blindness to the conflicts going on around the world. Okay, well, America invaded lots of places and nobody cares, you know, there's conflicts happening all over the world,
we're still paying attention
to this one.
There's a bleak and there's a less bleak way of looking at it, and I can't tell you which one is right. Both of them have shades of right. One of them, which is true, is that, well, the victims are white and people care because Ukrainians are white, and that's why this is getting outrage when what happened in Syria.
Well, the civilized nation, right? That's the line that a lot of people are taking. Like, absolutely, well, two civilized nations, like in conflict. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't Africa. Yeah. This is Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't Syria, you know. This
exactly. Or Yemen or whatever.
Syria, where we get the alphabet from. Anyway.
Right.
I have a collection of, like, statements made by people on mainstream platforms. There was Ukraine deputy chief prosecutor was on the BBC. He said, "It's very emotional for me because I see European people with blue eyes and blonde hair being killed." On CBS, there was a foreign correspondent said, "This isn't Iraq or Afghanistan. This is a relatively civilized, relatively European city."
It's simultaneously racist to huge chunks of the world, and also racist to Ukraine.
even places like Al Jazeera. There was a commentator who said, "What's compelling is looking at them, the way they're dressed. They're prosperous, middle class people. These are not obviously refugees trying to get away from the Middle East or from North Africa. They look like they look like any European family that you could live next door to."
I mean,
we're in the 21st century. We're in a European city. Yeah,
you can live next door to anybody.
Yeah. And also,
not
like,
just European families.
I spent days on the refugee trail in 2015 talking to Syrians who had just immediately fled the carpet bombing of their cities. And like, yeah, a lot of them were like doctors and accountants and lawyers and professors and shit. It doesn't make them more valid, but like,
well, the judging people on how they look, you're like, yeah, they're leaving right now. They've just become refugees.
Like, it doesn't matter.
They're leaving
like,
their homes in this moment. But I just mean, like, the idea of, like, you're talking about a stereotype of what
it's
you think
so
a refugee is without, like, they're the type of people that are poor. No, every refugee is leaving their home, and then they lose their shit, and they don't have a place to sleep, and they're running, and they're on the road, and they can't, you know, like... Fuck you! Sorry.
It's disgusting. it's frankly one of the most disgusting things that have come out of the commentary on this.
There were a couple more quotes, Garrison, if you want to get to them, because I think they're all worth I think, mentioning because they're all pretty nasty.
Cody, you do some.
Oh, good. So here are words that I don't believe, but I'm reading it. This is a quote. We are in the 21st century. We are in a European city, and we have cruise missile fire as though we were in Iraq or Afghanistan. Can you imagine?
Oh, wow. Can you imagine?
It's an important question.
Yeah,
we're not talking
I actually can.
Yeah, can you? We're not talking here about Syrians fleeing. We're talking about Europeans. Excellent stuff. This time, war is wrong because the people look like us and have Instagram and Netflix accounts. It's not in a poor, remote country anymore.
Fuck you, you piece of human shit, Daniel.
I think Daniel Hannon, like, maybe, like, war is
wrong. Who is Daniel Hannon? What does this fucker do for a living?
Daily Telegraph.
Okay, yeah, so somebody who should get a brick.
God, what
a
piece of
brickin'.
Shit.
That is, if you're looking at how you can help in this current conflict. Mm-hmm.
Brick people like that.
Yeah,
like,
give them a brick. Give them a brick.
Instagram, Netflix accounts. Fuck you,
yeah,
you piece
fuck
of
like,
garbage.
You piece of dog shit. Like, there's, it's so comprehensively wrong, but that, like, do you think that having an Instagram or a Netflix makes you more human? And also, do you think they don't have fucking Instagram in Iraq? Like, do you think they don't have,
I know,
like,
that's what I thought.
It's
fucking hell.
Like, unbelievable. Like, and just, like, even just, like, if you, like... It's not even taking it out of context. If you just isolate,
it's
war
every
is wrong
context
because the
is
people
offensive.
Look like us
yeah.
is there a was, part of that sentence.
There was this very popular tweet from it's like a news aggregator account that's popular in this region that was a quote: Polish border guard carries a young Ukrainian girl across the border to safety in Poland. This is how real refugees look like,
yes!
Women and children. It's a very different picture on the Belarusian border, where it's mainly Middle Eastern men trying to cross into Poland illegally. Unbelievable. Yeah. Like,
it's really,
I mean,
really disgusting.
It is believable. So, like, but it's just gross. It's like full mask off on all these people.
Just like saying, like, yeah, so I guess we know why you didn't care. Just really obvious, and kind of like, I don't know, I guess, like, it's one of those, like, you know, remembering back in the other wars, just like, it's just awful take a, like, month of just like, okay, just like flood with like the worst opinions you could possibly imagine, and it's all okay because it's war coverage. Like, we don't, mm-hmm. like, there's, like, everyone's like less discerning, less careful with their words and how they frame things, and you know, some of these people might not even realize what they're saying.
Yeah.
Because they, it's like, you gotta say something, you gotta talk,
you know,
and like, I'm gonna let myself out.
The best example of that, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it was some motherfucker being like, celebrating, you know, Ukrainian resistance and being like, you know, what Putin didn't count on is that this is the first war with social media. We're like, we're seeing everything as it happens, and people realize it's like, have you been fucking high the last 15 years?
I have, and I know it's wrong.
I have spent a couple of hundred hours going through footage of multiple civil wars. I know people who have spent thousands of it. Every second of the Syrian civil war has been either live streamed or tweeted or Facebooked or Instagrammed. Same thing with the Iraqi civil war. Same thing to a substantial extent with what's happened in Libya. Same thing to a lesser extent, just because of, I think, some realities of infrastructure, but to a significant degree with what's happening in Ethiopia and Tigray right now. Like, there is no limit to the amount of combat footage you can find. And this is not comprehensive. It's in Malaysia, right? Or in Burma. Huge amount of that war has been documented online, has been shown in videos, including, like, the protests up to beforehand and, like, the fucking Gen Z militias that are now, like, fucking TikToking from the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this has been happening for forever. And not only that, not just are you wrong, this is the first war that's been a factor in. Putin understood that. He knew all of this was going to happen. His gamble is that, what are you gonna fucking do about it? I have nukes.
Exactly.
And I have the ground power to win unless NATO is willing to risk a nuclear war, which they won't.
I mean, it's even just now as we're recording, I found another one from one of the most popular Spanish TV news channels saying, these aren't like other children that we've become accustomed to seeing suffer on TV.
Oh,
these
awesome.
Children are blonde with blue eyes, so this is very important.
I mean,
And again, it's comprehensively wrong because, like, white is them being blonde matter. And it's also comprehensively wrong because, motherfucker, I have seen blonde kids in refugee camps in three countries.
No, it's like, it's, of course, like it's so racist.
Like,
yeah. It's so racist, but it's also like the dismissal of any kind of conflict in Palestine, any conflict around, like, yeah, like Belarus, the Middle East, South Asia. It's like it shows that they just view those people as less human.
Yeah,
right. While at the same time using images from those conflicts as propaganda for this conflict.
Exactly.
It's a version of why you remember that video from 2020 where, like, that old man is on his bike moving backwards away from a police line and a cop shoves him and he cracks his head on the concrete and bleeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously that's fucked up. You should be angry at that. But, like, part of why people got so angry is he doesn't look like the people mm-hmm. that's supposed to happen to.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a big chunk of this. And that's not, I don't think that's surprising to anyone who listens to this show.
No, it's not surprising, but it is very bare watching them just express how they view so many people as less human. Well, yeah, just like Cody said, at the same time using footage from these conflicts as for their own propaganda, it's so gross.
Yeah, well, not care. Yeah. It's,
I will say, I think there is a potential optimistic side of this. I think it's up to us to make it be optimistic, but there is a potential here, which is that a lot of the people who are so horrified by what's going on in ways that they weren't about other conflicts that have been going on for years, it's not because, like, they're monsters or they're actively racist. It's because that kind of shit didn't go viral for a lot of reasons that have very little to do with them. And so they didn't see much of it. And they don't mm-hmm. like, other than vaguely knew that something was going on in Syria, something they're just not. And they had shit to do, right? Everybody's got life going on. Everybody's like, I've talked to Ukrainians and I did when the war started, who were like, I didn't think it would happen here. So that's part of why I called the fucking podcast It Could Happen Here, is when I was first reporting on that civil war, that was something people kept saying to me. It was variants of, like, I didn't think it would happen, like, to me. And maybe there is a potential in people who are now rightly horrified by what's happening in Ukraine to get them to recognize how widely this is happening, to get them to recognize this is the consequence of not dealing with authoritarianism on a global scale, of a lack of solidarity, of a lack of active willingness to stand up for the rights of other people, and to recognize the things going on in those countries is wrong. I think there is a possibility to get people to have more of an understanding for Palestine, more of an understanding for Burma, more of an understanding, an active solidarity for Tigray, for a bunch of other parts of the world, because they're now activated in a moral sense.
Right.
And to a degree, that's a thing that's like, that's a thing that you can do. And I think the way to do that is not to, again, you have to be, it's not a matter of saying you shouldn't care about Ukraine because this bad thing is happening here. It's a matter of saying, hey, you think that's fucked up. It is. Here's
in addition
the
to
same
that.
Thing
yeah,
happening.
It's, you have to care about it. Yeah. You have to care about it in general, not and pick it, and choose.
It requires people being willing to look at these conflicts as authoritarians versus non-authoritarians, but not as not as, like, sides in the geopolitical sense, because, right, Turkey is very much against what Russia is doing in Ukraine, because Turkey and Russia have been for a very long time, longer than any of us have been alive, geopolitical rivals in some very specific ways that they find this threatening. And so they are sending weapons to Ukraine and they are, you know, potentially cutting off Russian access to the Black Sea, doing a lot of stuff. Turkey is also engaged in a continuous gradual process of ethnic cleansing in northern Iraq and northeastern Syria. Mm-hmm. And they heavily supported Azerbaijan in an ethnic cleansing in Armenia. They're not good guys because they're on the right side of this conflict. But the Azeris and the Syrian and Iraqi Kurds, you should see as being, broadly speaking, on the same side as the people resisting Putin, because they are all standing up against people who are trying to go into their fucking homes and take that from them. And there is a degree to which you have to understand the inherent solidarity of all people suffering and fighting against this kind of horror without letting that lead you to the simplifying things as, like, okay, Russia bad, U.S. good, you know, Turkey good, Russia bad, or Turkey bad, Russia good, or like, all, like, don't don't let, like, because that's
it's
part
not
of
black
how
and
they
white.
Get away.
Yeah, that's really, yeah.
It mean, is it, black and that. White. It just isn't black and white in terms of fucking borders.
I mean,
you know?
Even.
Okay, that's was, right, yes.
Yeah. There was, it's so horrifying because even, like, there was this transcript of a Russian soldier's text messages to his mother that kind of went viral.
Jesus Christ,
a few days
that was
ago.
Harrowing. Yeah.
That was, it was like he was telling his mom that he's no longer in Crimea, he's not in training sessions anymore. His mom asks him, like, where he is and where they can send a care package to. He replies, what kind of parcel, mom? What can you send me? I just want to hang myself now. And mom's like, what are you talking about? What's happened? He said, mom, I'm in Ukraine. There's a real war raging here. I'm afraid. We are bombing all the cities together, even targeting civilians. We were told that they would welcome us, and they are falling under our armored vehicles, throwing themselves under our wheels, not allowing us to pass. They call us fascists. Mama, this is so hard. Like, everyone involved, it's all miserable for. Like,
yeah.
Like, for a lot of people, like, there is, I'm sure there is some sickos that do enjoy the war, but for a lot of the people.
Especially among, like, the special
but
forces
these are a
guys.
Lot of,
but, like,
of,
but,
that's
but
not
he's,
most of them.
But
yeah.
he's, this Russian soldier who just wants to hang himself because of all this happening. And if you miss that, I think you're really missing out on a lot of the.
Yeah.
A lot of what's actually happening, mm-hmm. because this is an important aspect to recognize,
well, right,
even though it's tough to think about.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's war. It's the horrors of war.
There are a bunch of kids that, or men, young men, however old, that join the army, and now.
Well, they don't. I mean, they don't.
President is making them go do this thing.
They don't often choose to in Russia because they
that,
do.
Yeah.
Russia, a lot of them are conscripts, and even when they do, the contract soldiers, a lot of them do it because it's a way to get, like, a government paid for apartment,
yeah.
and they
right.
didn't necessarily expect this to happen. And it's
most militaries prey on
people exactly.
to join. Like, we'll get you there.
There's this fucked up, like, the reality is, you know, to go back to people talking about, like, these people have Instagrams and Netflix. Like, there's a lot of kids who would much rather be fucking around on Instagram or playing PUBG or whatever first person shooter or something, and are burning to death in armored personnel carriers. And that's not good either. Doesn't mean that, like, I don't support Ukrainians firing as many anti-tank missiles as they can into as many armored vehicles as try to enter their country, because that's the fucking situation. But it's not.
Yeah.
It's none of it's worth celebrating.
Yeah. To your point and, like, earlier point, I think it's kind of a bummer that this is, like, the only. I guess positive thing, like, out of so many stories where, like, the thing you take away from is, like, well, I guess people will realize more that things are bad in these ways that they haven't previously. And that seems to be, like, the case with so many things these days, where it's like, well, at least people are realizing that it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, leading to,
do
okay,
we
well,
to
in 10 or 20, 30 years, will, like, people be able to do something else about it, but.
Isn't enough. And I
right,
yeah,
yeah.
I don't want it to come across as, like, that's what I'm saying. That at least
oh,
people,
I didn't think that's what you're saying.
It is a responsibility to make people, to make that matter, right? Like, that, if you're actually looking at what you can do, you tweeting about Zelensky doesn't matter. You tweeting, like, videos of, like, whatever thing you think might be a war crime or whatever, almost certainly will not matter. What does matter is the extent to which you can get people to realize what's actually going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And that being anti-war is meaningless. Being anti-Russia is meaningless. Being understanding the dynamics of the global net of this interlocking net of conflicts where different authoritarian powers are bringing tremendous violence on populations of people for the geopolitical gains of a tiny number of people, understanding the way that net works and understanding that the only way to actually combat it is a mix of solidarity and at times open armed resistance, as we're seeing in Ukraine, as is happening in Burma, as is happening in Northeast Syria, as is happening in all these other parts of the world. That is the thing, and seeing that as connected, seeing the struggles of Palestinians against Israeli soldiers as connected to the struggles of Ukrainian civilians against Russian soldiers, even though Israel's sending weapons to Ukraine right now, that is something that we can all have a role in furthering, and I think that's the productive thing that people can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for us today, I think, but we will obviously continue talking about this.
Yeah, one last note, if you're looking for a Twitter account to follow that is actually putting effort into verifying videos and images that they find and is doing a, what I consider to be a competent job of that, Rob Lee, RALEE85 on Twitter, has done pretty consistently a good job of like not just vetting things, but sharing other things that other people have vetted. If you actually want to keep up with it in that way, it's better than just watching random people share videos from chunks from video games that have been, you know, color corrected or whatever.
Okay, thank you. All right, guys.
It's
watch
time.
Yourself online.
Yeah.
I'll be back. Bye.
I tried. Yes. Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.